Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 21st, 2020. Section A. Coronavirus. Peyton. Leeway needed in virus restrictions. Local entities to approach governor's office about opening more businesses, mayor says. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Mayor Patrick Peyton said Thursday that discussions are taking place to open up more of Midland and move toward a safe and healthy opening of our economy here. The mayor stated during a Unified Command Team press conference that he couldn't go into details, but the city, hospital, and other entities are part of an initiative to approach the governor's office to open up more businesses. We're just trying to get back some of our ability to run our own city, Peyton said. We've really reached this place as a city where we're about as open as we can get without violating governor's orders. Bars have been the most high profile of the businesses impacted by the shutdowns associated with the coronavirus pandemic. Bars were forced to close for the second time on June 26th. We're not like Dallas or San Antonio or Houston. We need some leeway, Patton said, so we can take care of what we need to take care of as a city. Peyton said he hopes Governor Abbott will call a special session so that the legislators can be in Austin debating what's happening rather than the governor running this thing by dictate. The mayor said Midlanders already have shown the ability to respond to the virus, not once but twice, and there is an expertise in place for the city's businesses and residents to have the freedom to open up. The city reopened reported coronavirus case numbers last week that were the lowest in about a month. This week is on pace to be the lowest in about 2 months. We know how to manage our health and take care of ourselves, Peyton said. We need to have the broader freedom to get out from under the restrictions of specialty declarations so that we can open the way we need to open. Peyton said community leaders are negotiating with state leaders and not making threats or anything like that. Politics. Katie Joyner running for MISD District 4. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. A 30-something wife and mother told the Reporter Telegram she is running for school board because residents deserve board members who are willing to ask the hard questions, do the research, and listen to the community's concerns. Katie Joyner seeks to represent District 4, which starts in central Midland near Bowie Fine Arts Academy and works its way across the city, picking up neighborhoods around Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Midland Alternative Program, Lamar Elementary, Long, Burnett, and then works its way into southwest Midland and into the county. John Kennedy is the current representative. He will not seek re-election. Challenging Joyner will be Joe Deal and Steve Vargas. Joyner is a product of MISD schools, having attended, among others, Sam Houston, long before it became an academy and before the district was forced to make it an in-district charter to avoid a state takeover or a campus closure like the former Crockett Elementary. She brings a resume of volunteerism, including service on boards such as the YMCA and the Midland Memorial Forum, which she said was started to get young people involved with the hospital and Midland Health. But she says her passion has become making the school district better. Her husband Dave was a co-chair on last year's school bond campaign, something she said helped prepare her for a school board bid. She called the bond campaign eye-opening, and even though it was a one-issue campaign, it taught them about listening to people and their issues. She also said the bond is in the past and doesn't want her family's involvement to confuse people about the type of school board member she will be. Joyner said her campaign will be comprised of three tenets: accountability, communication, and transparency. And those who believe she won't call out leadership missed two of the most recent school board meetings when Joyner called in during two public comment periods in June when she expressed her concerns about an opposition to a school calendar proposal and last week to express concerns about at-home start of the school. Joyner started a petition to call for MISD leadership to return to school after 4 weeks of at-home instruction. She also wants to see the district do more to prepare the community for the big issues and then follow through with more communication and explanation when needed. She again pointed to the reentry process as an example in which the district could have done more to help its families and teachers, especially considering the time it had to prepare. Joyner said she isn't afraid to express her opinions and said she will educate herself before making decisions. She also said she will keep an open mind to solutions that come from constituents. She also believes that her participation requires working with other board members to come up with solutions. We need action. We need compromise, and we need leadership, Joyner said. MPD unveils Nathan Hayden Heidelberg Memorial Highway sign by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. The Midland Police Department on Thursday unveiled a highway sign honoring Nathan Hayden Heidelberg, the officer who was killed on duty in March 2019. The sign reads, Officer Hayden Heidelberg Memorial Highway, featuring Heidelberg's preferred name, which is his middle name. It will be placed on Farm to Market Road 307, which the Midland County Commissioner's Court named after Heidelberg in September 2019. Deputy Chief Greg McCrite spearheaded working with the county and state to have the sign made. He said the police department began working on naming the road for Heidelberg soon after his death. We knew we were still trying to recover and make sense of what was happening, but we knew what we were going to do moving forward was to continue to honor him. And this was a very legitimate way that we could do that, not just for us to remember him, but for the community as a whole. FM 307 was chosen because Heidelberg grew up in Greenwood and was definitely a Greenwood boy. He said the choice was also symbolic because Heidelberg served as a bridge between the Midland and Greenwood communities. In an interview following the unveiling, McCrite reflected on the last year and how Heidelberg's death impacted the MPD. It's been a tough year, he said. We don't go very long without remembering him. It's a daily basis for most of us that he's still a part of our lives. He was an exceptional young man. He was an excellent officer, and he's greatly missed. Also during Thursday's ceremony, MPD announced they would be gifting Heidelberg's former patrol car to his family. It was the unit that Hayden drove for most of his career, McCrite said. When it came time to decommission the car, we thought it would be very poignant and very helpful for the family to continue to help with closure and continue to help them hold on to Hayden by providing this car to them. Heidelberg was allegedly shot and killed by homeowner David Wilson on March 5, 2019, while responding to a burglar alarm call. Wilson told police at the time that he mistook Heidelberg for an intruder. Wilson, president and CEO of Unitex Oil and Gas, was indicted by a Midland County grand jury on a charge of manslaughter, a second-degree felony, in May of 2019. He faces 2 to 20 years in state prison if convicted. His trial was expected to take place this summer, but was delayed after Governor Greg Abbott suspended jury trials amid the coronavirus pandemic. A date for Wilson's trial has not yet been set, according to District Attorney Laura Nodoff. Hospital CEO, virus has not been eliminated from the community, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers said Thursday that while metrics are showing an improvement in the level of coronavirus in the community, he doesn't see it being eliminated soon. Myers said during a Unified Command Team press conference that hospital officials are encouraged by the fact that fewer people are seeking testing and fewer people are sick with coronavirus. He added that there may have been 6 straight weeks of reduced positive tests at MMH's testing site. So while we consider those to be encouraging numbers and the hospital's declining census to be encouraging, under no circumstances do we believe that the virus has been eliminated from the community. That's not going to happen until there is a vaccination for the virus and or an effective treatment that can be used broadly to eradicate it. Myers and Mayor Patrick Payton talked about this being a critical time as students return to school, community leaders wanting to open the economy more, and Midlanders wanting to avoid another larger increase in the number of coronavirus cases. Meyer said he expects a smaller spike, and no matter the numbers, the hospital district will be there to support MISD and other educational entities. The same holds true, according to Myers, when it comes to businesses reopening safely and effectively. Can we drive the number of cases to zero in the short run, Myers said? I don't think so. We have to recognize that. So we'll continue to work together closely to get better and better information. Myers said he was open to broader testing, especially as testing resources have become a little bit more abundant recently. He said that more should be known in the next few days about the possibility of using oral swabs or a saliva test. There is actually one lab in the state of Texas that is beginning to ramp up its ability to do oral swabs, and may be able to do those in significant quantity. But clearly, there's been a good bit of development in less invasive, faster turnaround testing that might allow us to broaden the swath of the community that we're able to test and get a better idea of community spread. And we hope that's useful in decision-making as we go forward. There are 14 COVID patients in Midland Memorial Hospital, the lowest number in a couple of weeks. 5 of those patients are in critical care. Those patients range in age from 30 to 90. He said there are 8 staff members who have either tested positive or had symptoms that required them to be quarantined, a number that is now down from a peak in the 50s. He also said the emergency department saw 109 patients on Wednesday, a number he indicated was down from what is normal around this time of year. So that challenge continues. There might be some who believe the number of recoveries seems low. For instance, there have been 3,011 cases in Midland County, but 1,366 recoveries. That includes only 25 recoveries since August 10th. Whitney Craig with the Midland Health Department reported that there isn't a time frame for recoveries, but that the department looks at how a person is actually feeling on a medical basis. She said health department officials look at their symptoms. If there is a patient with a lingering cough that requires the patient to be on oxygen, then the health department would not transfer that person as recovered. Craig said that the health department adds a number of people isolating and those under investigation to determine the number of active cases. She said those people who wouldn't respond to requests for updates are not factored into that number because health department officials haven't spoken with them. Health department to open up clinical office, from staff reports. Before coronavirus, residents used the Midland Health Department for vaccinations, among other things. That changed March 23rd when the health department closed because of the pandemic. City of Midland and health department officials said Thursday that the department again will provide clinical services beginning Tuesday by appointment only. Midlanders will be able to schedule appointments beginning today for the following week. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. Health officials said Thursday during a unified command team meeting that with children starting the school year and the flu season approaching, it is important that residents take an assessment of their health needs. The health department's Whitney Craig said Thursday that the vaccines were available for children and college-age students. Others using clinical services include tuberculosis patients, also can make appointments. Patients also can be screened for pregnancy and STD services. There will be immunization clinics from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. August 29th and September 12th and 8:15 to 6 p.m. September 21st. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. Total cases during pandemic eclipsed 3,000 by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. The number of confirmed cases involving Midland County residents has topped 3,000, according to the Midland Health Department. The department reported 33 new confirmed cases on Thursday. That brings the total number of cases this week to 123 and the number during the pandemic to 3,011. The number includes 1,042 isolated cases and 409 under investigation, for a total of 1,451 active cases in Midland County. The health department also reported 1,366 recoveries and 133 people who tested positive that health department officials were unable to locate or those who refused to provide an update. There also have been 62 COVID-19-related deaths in Midland County. The city reported the 62nd death Thursday night, a woman in her 90s with underlying health conditions. She was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. Thursday's new cases were reflective of lab results from Wednesday, according to the health department. Virus briefs from Wire Reports. Austin. Texas joined states applying for Trump's unemployment boost. Texas on Thursday joined the growing list of states that will pursue President Donald Trump's plan to offer a stripped-down boost in unemployment benefits to millions of Americans amid the pandemic. Republican Governor Greg Abbott announced that Texas will apply for federal grants, allowing the state to increase unemployment checks by $300. An AP survey found that, as of Thursday, at least 25 states have said they intend to pursue the money, while two states, Mississippi and South Dakota, have said they will not. Abbott previously was noncommittal about Texas would accept the money, while expressing optimism that Trump and Congress would reach a deal on a broader new relief plan. People out of work had been receiving an extra federally funded $600 a week, but that boost expired at the end of July. The president signed an executive order on August 8th to extend the added weekly benefit, but cut it to $300 or $400 a week, depending on which plan governors choose. The Lost Wage Assistance Program will provide crucial financial support to Texans who have lost their jobs due to the pandemic. Maryland. Fauci recovering after surgery to remove vocal cord polyp. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the U.S. government's top infectious disease expert, underwent surgery Thursday to remove a growth from his vocal cord that was causing his notably raspy voice. Fauci, who directs the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, underwent outpatient surgery for the polyp and was home and resting. Fauci, a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, has become the nation's leading scientific voice on the pandemic, giving regular public advice via media interviews and webcasts. Polyps are bumps that can form on the vocal cords and cause hoarseness. Fauci has been open about his, saying in an interview with the Economic Club of Washington this spring that he had an irritated throat after a bout of winter flu that never got a chance to heal. "I probably have a polyp there," he said at the time, adding that the only way you're going to make it get better is to keep your mouth shut. But that's not in the cards right now. CNN first reported the surgery. City. Three people charged in alleged assault from staff reports. Three people were being held in Midland County Jail Thursday after an incident in which a male was stabbed multiple times, according to a press release. Timothy P. Samuels, 28, was charged with two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Pearlie Jackson, 52, was charged with one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and David P. Samuels, 57, was charged with one count of assault causing bodily injury, a Class A misdemeanor. Bond has not been set as of Thursday night. A fourth person allegedly involved in the altercation, Quimberly Samuels, 27, fled the scene before police arrived, and an arrest warrant was issued for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Midland police responded to the 900 block of South Atlanta Street shortly before noon Thursday to assist Midland County Sheriff's deputies due to several persons armed with a jack handle and possibly a knife. Several persons were detained, and officers found two persons who required medical attention. A male victim had been stabbed multiple times. He was treated at the scene by Midland Fire Department paramedics. A female victim was also sustained minor injuries. Timothy Samuels also was injured and was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. He was charged after leaving the hospital, according to the release.
Hello, this is Michael reading an additional article from today's Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, August 21st. DPS reports Odessa man dies in two-vehicle wreck. From staff reports. A 57-year-old Odessa man died Wednesday morning after a two-vehicle crash on Farm to Market Road 1787 in Midland County, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Andrew Ramirez was driving a Chevrolet Silverado eastbound, and a 41-year-old crane man was driving a Mack truck westbound. The truck, which was towing a semi-trailer, entered the eastbound lane and hit the pickup, according to the release. Ramirez died at the scene. The other driver was not injured. The wreck occurred shortly before 6 a.m., 16 miles south of Odessa. It is still under investigation. Ramirez is the 17th person to die on roads in Midland County this year. The number of fatalities year to date is the same as in 2019, according to Reporter Telegram records. The most recent fatality occurred July 23rd, when a 68-year-old Midland woman was hit by a Kia Sorento while walking in the area of Rankin Highway and Walcott Avenue. The driver, Anthony D. Stubbs, 41, of Odessa, who had left the scene of the wreck, was arrested August 4th and charged with accident involving death. He is being held at Midland County Jail on a $50,000 bond.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 21, 2020. Put your name on it. Claire Babineau-Fontenot, CEO of Feeding America, visited the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa on Tuesday. Feeding America is a network of 200 food banks across the nation. MCPL to extend hours for students. Midland County Public Libraries is launching Library Connections, an initiative for students to spend time at the library as they begin the fall semester with virtual learning. MCPL will extend hours at both the Centennial and Downtown branches to allow students and their parents access to public computers, free Wi-Fi, digital resources, extended services, and the library's collections, according to a press release. Both branches will open at 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. beginning Monday for kindergartners through 12th graders and their parents. Students 15 and younger must be accompanied by parent or guardian. Extending the reach of its services, each morning the library's bookmobile each morning will offer free Wi-Fi, book and DVD checkouts, and library card signups at various locations around town, including Dennis the Menace Park, Washington Park, C.J. Kelly Park, and Casa de Amigos' parking lot. The library is working with Midland ISD to get the bookmobile to school campuses, according to the release. Students and their parents will be required to wear masks, and capacity likely will be increased to about 50%. For the general public, hours remain 10 a.m. through 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Firefighters have virtual Fill the Boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland Local 4405 have launched a virtual Fill the Boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at https://filltheboot.donordrive.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. City updates watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, customers 60+. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60+, with disabilities or at risk. Today in history. On August 21, 1831, Nat Turner launched a violent slave rebellion in Virginia, resulting in the deaths of at least 55 whites. Turner was later executed. On this date, in 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrated his new telescope to a group of officials atop the Campanile in Venice. In 2014, Governor Jay Nixon ordered the Missouri National Guard to begin withdrawing from Ferguson, where nightly scenes of unrest had erupted since a white police officer fatally shot a black 18-year-old nearly 2 weeks earlier.
The Opinion Page. Opinion Extra by Stuart Doreen. Let process play out as board continues to evaluate Riddick. The Midland ISD board is meeting at 2:30 p.m. today, and there's one item according to the agenda: superintendent evaluation. The special meeting is a continuation of what started on Monday night when the board went into executive session for 4 hours. That is a long time, more than enough for speculation to build about what could be happening. That speculation was turned up by a factor of 1,000 when board members came out of the closed session meeting and District 4 Representative John Kennedy said, "I move that we not extend Mr. Riddick's contract and that we continue discussion of this item at a specially called meeting on Friday at 2:30 p.m. "What was that?" I said to myself around 12:07 a.m. Tuesday. The answer to the question, "What does it mean?" is pretty simple. We don't know. It seems over the past few days that a million people told me they heard about what was said in executive session and that they were told about potential outcomes of the second part of the superintendent evaluation. I'm reserving judgment for two reasons about who is spreading the gospel and who is spreading rumors. First, I'm sure MISD lawyers would frown upon board members communicating out of turn the details of executive sessions. And second, this is 2020. Everything we know about everything has been wrong. Expect the unexpected. Nothing is certain. But most importantly, today's meeting should be treated as what it appears to be, an evaluation. Until Board President Rick Davis says otherwise, it is trustees fulfilling one of their most important duties, reviewing the yearly performance of Midland ISD superintendent. Could the board be divided about something? They were in a closed session meeting for 4 hours. I suspect division is or was likely. Will that division end up in anything more than the superintendent not receiving a raise or extension? I suppose it's possible. Here's why I'm a bit skeptical. Some of the greatest community outrage in my nearly 20 years of covering government in Midland has been when someone received money based on a departure. It doesn't matter if that entity was ultimately doing the right thing, as most separation agreements usually are. The right result that could come from any superintendent's evaluation is this: he or she is clear about the board's expectations when it comes to academic achievement, school and student safety, positive employee outcomes, and satisfactory communication with the community. If that person can't come to agreement with the board, then maybe there is a reason for additional conversation. Anyone who has paid attention to MISD, even a little bit, during the last few months, has seen a board that generally has acted differently. This board has shown itself to be a body that has known what it wanted and taken the lead when needed. That brings me to the final point. Should there really be an issue, including an eyebrow raiser? What Midlanders should want, even more than a particular outcome, is that the board acts proactively, decisively, and does what is best for education in Midland. If they accomplish that, even the most ardent critic should be satisfied. Obituaries and death notices. Paul Vincent Price, 58, of Midland, passed away peacefully, surrounded by his family, on Tuesday, August 18th. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday at Nellie Picamamos Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday at Greenwood Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Greenwood Cemetery. William Bill Maurice Thurman, Jr., born July 22, 1939, passed away August 16th. Services will be held at Christian Church of Midland on Saturday, August 22nd. Visitation from 4 to 5 p.m., followed by memorial service, will be streamed on the church's Facebook page. In lieu of flowers, a donation can be given to the Christian Church of Midland or Hospice of Midland. Juan Liljohn Corrales, age 27, of Odessa, passed away on August 6th. He was born to Mary Rivas and late Juan L. Corrales on April 12, 1993, in Monahans. He is survived by his mother, Mary Rivas, and two siblings. A funeral will be held Friday, August 21st at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home and Crematory.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, August 20. Section A. ECHD reports 64 active Deering's cases by Michael Merlot. Dr. Timothy Benton said that while some COVID-19 tests of residents and staff are pending at Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation in Odessa, the total positives at this case are 72, and 64 of the cases are currently active, he said, during the Thursday virtual hospital briefing. 56 of the positive patients are reportedly residents, and the other 16 are reported as staff. Benton added that 5 of those nursing home patients have died from COVID-19-related complications, and that the health department has been in contact with the nursing home. Local health professionals reportedly went to the facility to do infection control education regarding cleaning and personal protective equipment. Benton also said that the nursing home has set up an isolation unit. While the Ector County Health Department website is showing a positivity rate at 18.1%, Benton said that it's been a current struggle because not all the entities are reporting their negative tests, which would impact the positivity rate. That's probably the difference in it being slightly higher than it was last week, he said. The Ector County Health Department website detailed Thursday that while there have been 3,958 total cases of COVID-19 in the county, 2,658 are reported as confirmed positives, 1,300 reported as probable positives, and 711 cases are listed as active. While 3,183 people have recovered from the virus, 64 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that while 1,275 people have tested positive for COVID-19, 23 positive COVID-19 patients are in the hospital, including 8 in the critical care unit, and 6 of those patients are on ventilators. 15 patients are on the 8 central isolation unit. Timmons said that of those in-hospital patients, one is from Pecos, 2 are from Fort Stockton, 2 are from the Deering's Nursing Home, 2 are from Siena Nursing Home, 1 is from Buena Vida in Odessa, and 1 is from Buena Vida in McCamey. She added that 27 tests are pending. Timmons said that MCH received a large amount of material for the antibody testing, which can show if people have been exposed to the virus, but does not show if they are currently infected. We just thought it would be some due diligence to have that opportunity for the community to have access to more of those tests, she said. Timmons said that those interested in getting tested can schedule an appointment and must provide $20 in cash. Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital President Stacy Brown said that out of 2,412 total tests, 382 people have tested positive, and 12 positive patients are in the hospital. She added that 5 of those patients are in the ICU and 7 are on another designated floor, while 4 patients on the ICU are on ventilators. 8 of the in-house patients are Ector County residents, she said. One of the patients is from Andrews, one is from Crane, one is from Big Spring, and one is from Fort Stockton. 21 tests are reportedly pending at ORMC. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan reported that the CDC published a list of medical conditions that make people high risk if they get COVID-19, including cancer, chronic kidney disease, obesity, serious heart diseases, sickle cell anemia, diabetes, among others. That's the list of medical conditions that usually comes as a top increased risk for severe illness from COVID-19, he said. Those interested in getting the antibody test can make an appointment online at https://tinyurl.com/y23hnfe6. And a list of medical conditions that are shown as an increased risk for severe illness from COVID-19 can be located on the CDC website at https://tinyurl.com/y8bffjbh. ECISD Teachers in Line for Incentive Pay by Ruth Campbell. If all goes well, by 2021-22, Ector County ISD teachers could be eligible for the Teacher Incentive Allotment Pay. The Teacher Incentive Allotment was passed by the Texas Legislature during its last session as part of House Bill 3. Basically, it's a pot of money that rewards the most effective teachers in the state of Texas, effectiveness defined by the growth of students in ECISD. We wanted to be a part of that program, Superintendent Scott Murray said during a media call Wednesday. It's not a requirement in Texas, but ECISD wanted to offer it. In each category, the district received the highest rating. I commend the team that put that plan together, where we were thrilled with the results, Murray said. This year, 2020-21, will be a data collection year. That will be our process this year to collect lots of data from our teachers and students. At the end of the year, all that data will be sent to Texas Tech University. They will analyze the data to make sure that it is valid and reliable, and they'll notify us next fall 2021. If indeed our data is valid and reliable, and then assuming it is, we will be approved and ultimately to begin to compensate our most effective teachers at a pretty significant rate, Murray said. We're excited to be able to bring that to the city of Odessa and to Ector County, and thrilled for our teachers to have this opportunity. This time last year, ECISD was talking about teacher shortages and openings. The district has hired 423 teachers this year so far. Last year, it started off with 350 vacancies. I feel good for the simple fact that we have most of our vacancies filled this year, but we still aren't quite sure why that's happening, Murray said. Certainly some of it is the pandemic and the fact that folks may not have left our community, and maybe we've actually brought some new folks into our community. Some of those new hires have come not only from other parts of Texas, but other parts of the United States. And in fact, even one of our new principals came to us from South America. There are other factors. I think economically we've seen the downturn. Our community continues to have a pretty high unemployment rate, and we know that some individuals have left prior employment, perhaps in the oil and gas industry, and have either entered or re-entered the education field. So we are benefiting in some regard from the current economic situation, he added. Murray said cases of COVID-19 have leveled off and are declining right now. As long as we continue to wash our hands, maintain social distancing, and wear face masks and face shields whenever appropriate, then we'll continue to be in good shape, he said. Three things that we are monitoring are the positivity rate in our community. We monitor the number of positive cases in our community, and we monitor the hospitalization, the number of patients that our hospitals have, and each of those data clearly indicate that right now we are safe to continue the phase-in process as long as we are following our own safety protocols. Everybody wears a mask 4th grade through 12th grade, Murray said. Any staff member who is around children wears a face shield in addition to their mask. Our staff members, as well as our students, have been incredibly responsive to that scenario. We'll continue to keep an eye on the data. Information on the phase-in plan can be found on the ECISD website in the Back to School section. New Juvenile Center, mauled. Old facility on East Yukon Road, old and outdated, county judge says. By Bob Campbell. Ector County doesn't have a good place to hold its juvenile delinquents, but that's apparently about to change. Commissioner's Court members say the 46-year-old Ector County Youth Center, 1401 East Yukon Road, on the north side of Odessa, long ago saw its better days, and they passed a resolution August 11th to allow themselves to issue certificates of obligation to cover the projected $20 million cost of a new one. County Judge Debbie Hayes and Commissioners Dale Childers and Armando Rodriguez say the logical location is west of the Ector County Detention Center on land the county owns west of U.S. 385, south of town. Hayes said the old 48-bed facility has been taken to task so often by the Texas Juvenile Justice Department that the court has little choice. The one we have is very old and outdated, Hayes said. It should be used for rehabilitation to show the children that there are better ways to improve themselves and prosper than a life of crime. A new center will give them the opportunity to learn vocational trades in a Christian environment. Hayes said the deficiencies of the old 33,100-square-foot building include the 41-member staff's inability to separate boys from girls and violent felony offenders from those charged with less serious crimes. Like any structure, you can continue to put money into it, but eventually you have to decide if you want to continue to do that, she said, predicting that the court will make a decision by the time the fiscal 2020-21 budget is approved, September 22nd. She favors building the new place on the west side of the adult jail so that staff members won't have to drive across town to have offenders fingerprinted at the sheriff's office and for other reasons of convenience and expense. Representing Precinct 3, which covers most of Odessa, Childers said the county is better able to handle the expense because its $7 million debt from 2015 to buy equipment and put $2 million into a land acquisition fund is almost paid. We've been having a hard time meeting the state standards because they have changed so much since the 1970s, Childers said. I have been out there and have seen the issues. We need to look at the dollar figure and see if it's feasible as far as the money goes. I'm leaning toward a new building. The need is there, but we have to review and discuss it and decide if we want to issue the certificates of obligation and borrow the money. Rodriguez is most concerned about the need to separate boys and girls and different classes of inmates. I took time a year and a half ago to go look, and I saw that people were mostly separated by a curtain, said Rodriguez, whose Precinct 4 encompasses the county's southeast side. We have so many youth coming in that the situation is getting worse. It's a big problem. I support a new building. We should have started about a year ago. Rodriguez said the new center may offer the option of incarcerating juveniles from other cities and counties and thereby turning a profit. The population is growing, he said. We don't want to wait till the last minute and then have a bigger problem. Youth Center Director Kevin Mann said his facility, next door to the ECISD Alternative Education Center, 1299 East Yukon, has become a melting pot of kids since its opening in 1974. About 35% of the inmates are girls, many of whom are arrested for burglary, robbery, assault, and possession of firearms. Hoping for a new place with 64 to 72 beds, Mann said more room will definitely be needed if the Texas legislature raises the age at which teenagers are still considered juveniles from 16 to 17, which has been debated in each of the last few biennial sessions. Republican State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa said the Raise the Age bills introduced by members of the House Democratic Caucus in Austin have been defeated in past sessions, but that similar proposals will probably be introduced in next year's session. Some of the concerns I have had with these bills remain, Landgraf said. If we did raise the age, it would really increase the populations at juvenile detention centers throughout West Texas that were not equipped for it. He said some of the bills would have raised the range of offenders who could be held by the ECYC and TJJD to 12. The worst offenders are sent to the TJJD's units at Brownwood, Giddings, Edinburgh, Mart, and Gainesville, where the total population on August 19th was 617. Department spokesman Brian Sweeney of Austin said those secure units have been accepting fewer inmates since the COVID-19 pandemic hit, having had 785 in early March. The local facility had averaged 35 inmates till recently ending its post-adjudication program and sending youths who'd been sentenced to county lockups in El Paso, Lubbock, Amarillo, Brownwood, and Granbury to avoid putting them at the TJJD units. Children are incarcerated between the ages of 10 and 16. The population here on August 19th was 16. Mann said the Odessa facility has had issues from damages to the metal paneling in the gym to the escape of two boys in February 2019 that was attributable to the building's poor design. Rainwater has seeped into some rooms where the walls meet the concrete flooring, and we have had plumbing issues where the lines backed up in the front of the building and flooded the office and the courtroom and conference room, he said. We have insecure doors and windows because the door frames and ceiling tiles are rotting out. They had a lot of truants and runaways in the 70s, but now the building gets a lot of abuse because the type of kids we're holding are more destructive. We have more at-risk kids and aggravated felony offenders, and the building is not designed to provide for those kind of kids.
COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,958. Ector County negative, 17,331 out of 21,529 tested, with 240 pending. 64 deaths. Recovered, 3,183. Active, 711. Midland County, 2,978 confirmed, 61 deaths. Texas, 562,559 confirmed, with 4,547,069 tested. Total Texas deaths, 10,793. U.S. cases, 5,506,929 total confirmed and 172,416 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. ECISD reports 5 new COVID cases. ECISD on Thursday reported 5 new COVID-19 cases, a news release said. Included in the report is one Odessa High School employee, one Alternative Center employee, one Sam Houston Elementary employee, one Bonham Middle School student, one Odessa Collegiate Academy student. Of note, this student has not been on campus this year. The total number of positive cases since August 5th is 29. Quick hits. Online film screenings. Ballroom Marfa has scheduled the following online screenings of 2020 Artists Film International AFI films on its film channel, tinyurl.com/YXF3DSPS. Saturday, 1 p.m., Miguel Fernandez de Castro, Grammar of Gates, Gramática de las Puertas, 2019, 21 minutes, includes a special introduction from the artist and published interview, selected by Ballroom Marfa. RACS, R-A-Q-S, Media Collective, Passwords for Time Travel, 2017, 10 minutes, selected by Project 88, Mumbai, India. August 29th, 1 p.m., Raish Store Junkanoo Talk, 2017, 12 minutes, selected by Whitechapel Gallery, London. Lisa Tan, My Pictures of You, 2017 to 2019, 23 minutes, selected by Bonniers Konsthall, Stockholm, Sweden, followed by a Zoom question and answer with artist Lisa Tan and ballroom curator Daisy Nam. More AFI 2020 films are available to stream at tinyurl.com/Y4SVJTR6 through August 31st. For more information, call 432-729-3600 or email info@ballroommarfa.org.
Local News Roundup. Gun and Blade Show. Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum. Admission is $7 for adults, free for ages 12 and under, free for law enforcement with badge, and $1 off for active military or NRA or WSRA. Face coverings are required. Visit silverspurtradeshows.com/shows. Adult Literacy Classes. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, 1709 West Wall Street in Midland, is now enrolling for fall semester classes beginning August 31st. Online and in-person classes are available Monday through Thursday. English language learning classes will be assigned based on student assessments. In-person class size is limited. Adults who speak English but are interested in developing their reading and writing skills can call to be added to a waiting list for a one-to-one tutor. Enrollment fee is $25. To apply or for more information or to schedule an assessment, call 682-9693 or visit tinyurl.com/T7T4BUX. Local News Roundup. Man charged with discharging firearm at apartment complex. A 33-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly discharged a firearm in an apartment complex in central Odessa. Barry Anthony Jones was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. He was also being held by the U.S. Marshals. The reported assault happened around 10:51 p.m. June 29th at the Ashford Odessa Square located at 222 North Dixie, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. When officers arrived, residents reportedly told police that he had fled into an apartment. Contact was made with Jones, who admitted to getting into a confrontation before discharging a handgun. Jones consented to a search of the apartment and escorted officers to SCCY CPX-2 9mm, which was found in the living room couch, the affidavit detailed. Doshonda Thomas reportedly told police she saw Jones get into a confrontation with another person. Jones reportedly showed a handgun, pointed the firearm at her and another person. Desiree Ward was also contacted, said that she heard a gunshot and saw Jones running with the firearm in his hand. Jones was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Wednesday. He had one bond totaling $40,000, and he was released to another agency. Odessa man dies in two-vehicle collision. A 57-year-old Odessa man died after he was reportedly involved in a two-vehicle collision in Midland County. The reported fatal collision happened at 5:50 a.m. Wednesday, about 16 miles south of Odessa on Farm to Market 1787, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Jorge Pinedo Jr., 41, of Crane, was reportedly driving a 2019 Mack truck tractor towing a semi-trailer west on FM 1787. Andrew Ramirez, 57, of Odessa, was traveling in a 2018 Chevrolet Silverado east on FM 1787. The Mack truck tractor entered the eastbound lane and collided with the Silverado. Both were wearing a seatbelt. Police searching for person connected to hit and run in mall parking lot. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for the person involved in a hit and run investigation that happened in the mall parking lot. The reported hit and run occurred at 11:58 a.m. August 12th in the Music City Mall parking lot, 4101 East 42nd Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation showed a blue Nissan SUV collided with a parked Subaru Outback and left the scene without meeting necessary legal requirements. OPD has released photos of the Nissan SUV at tinyurl.com/Y2A6RFB9. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact Hit and Run Investigator T. Yelly at 432-335-5759 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0014184.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.